Good afternoon. It is the day after St. Patrick's Day, and this is the Weeb Trash Can Podcast. I'm Byron D0, thankfully not nursing a hangover, and we don't have a full set today, but shout out to 606. How you doing? We love you. We miss you. We'll see you next podcast.
Olive juice.
She's busy adulting.
Yeah. Mag will be here. Also, not nursing a hangover. I was very responsible yesterday. I'm saving all my Irish for tonight. I'm heading right to a Chieftains concert after this. Nice. Very excited.
She's all dolled up.
Yes. I'm very pretty today.
She's very pretty every day. Don't listen to her.
Hey, it's all good. It's all good. Giuseppe Megatron 007 here, bringing heaven straight to your ears. All day, every day, on a Sunday. Love you.
Hey, here, Mechanical Mark here, freshly assembled, ready for the new job. I am the update from the last one. He kind of got deconstructed and recycled. So, you know, we make do with each and every show, and hey, I make the best out of it.
And today's topic, we are going to be talking about slice of life anime. This is one that's near and dear to my heart because anime as a whole, the various genres are usually have fantastic elements. Slice of life is just a good time to just sit down and compare the character's lifestyles to your own.
And decompress.
Oh, absolutely.
You have all these animes with these like heavy tropes, whether it be something like Kill la Kill, where you know people are getting chopped up and whatnot, mm-hmm. or you have really really cutesy ones where you just want to puke all the time. Well. A slice of life anime really tones everything back, dials it down, lets you examine things from a more philosophical perspective, and sometimes just from a more real perspective.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. It definitely, slice of life is exactly that. It typically takes place around, like, a school life, most typically, Which is a good thing to just kind of have on in the background to cleanse the palate almost. I personally find it kind of boring, which is why my pick is more of a deconstruction of slice of life. But I definitely understand the appeal of it.
All right, so I'll go first, and my pick is Genshiken. I had a friend here in Lowell, name was Andrew. He introduced me to it years ago. This was right after I was watching Comic Party, and we were both fans of that series. And then he said, you want something that's a little more believable? Check this series out. And so I did. And for those of you who are uninitiated to Genshiken, it's about a college anime club and their daily misadventures. I'm trying to remember the main character's name. It's kind of spotty, but new college inductee comes in. First day in college, he's trying to get associated with the various clubs. He comes across Genshiken, and it's being led by your various range of stereotypical otaku, pretty gangly or unfashionably to a certain extent, and it's about the day-to-day life. Story points range from nearly losing their club because of a member handling the club room irresponsible. Like there was an actual fire in that entire building because one of the club members fell asleep, and then their manga collection got burnt down, and they were on suspension from being a club.
Not the sacred text.
Oh yes.
God, that not fire, but that totally happened to... You said that the anime club almost got shut down because of one person being irresponsible, and I just cringed because that happened to my anime club in college, where basically the president just kind of decided they didn't want to anymore, and then didn't, like, pass anything on. So, no, I'm already having, like, real bad flashbacks to trying to... sort that mess out.
Slice Live gets real, real quick.
Oh, yeah, it really does. Shout out to Kaylin. Thank you for fixing everything in college.
Later episodes involve the main character, and actually developing a relationship with one of the newer inductees, who I believe her name was Ogiwe. And I remember her because she had like this ponytail that was that looked like it every single bottle of hair gel in the universe had been used to hold it up. But oddly enough, she could take her hair down, no problem.
Anime hair.
Yeah. We don't question the physics of it, people.
Oh, you know what though, is that Asian hair.
Is it a marrow fluid?
I don't know.
Oh god, I saw the weirdest picture the other day floating around of Yugi Moto without his spiked hair. Yes. It's like down and it's just, it's so weird looking. It's very upsetting.
I've seen that. I think I saw that last week at some point. It was pretty hilarious. I'm just like, why?
I think his gel got sent to the Shadow Realm.
Oh jeez. Yeah, so Ogiwe, she's an interesting character because she comes in as like your stereotypical tsundere type character, who when she meets some of the various members and she comes across probably one of the most annoying otaku personality types I've ever met in my life, named Kuchiki. He's just like hyper ginky, woo! And then when him and Ogiwe clash, she's just like, I don't like you. Kuchiki reacts by chopping her on the head. Which
split rocks.
Yes. Which in reaction kind of turns the entire Genshin fan base against them. Some really interesting one-off characters in the series were one of the other female members. She was like the cosplayer of Genshin. She had some friends from America coming in. And one of them was this little blonde girl who only knew Japanese through anime terms. The joke was she couldn't really speak Japanese, so she would just say random words like baka or an anime character whenever she was describing someone's personality. And looking back on it, I'm just like, why? Why? But yeah, Genji can age pretty well. There was like an additional season in the early 2000s, and then I want to say 2012, they did one after that, where Ogiwe was like one of the leading officers in the club. I remember watching that fondly because I was just out of college myself. And I'm just thinking, like, these people remind me of my gaming club at UMass Lowell. Like, you had your gangly, awkward personalities. And the club room at the time was basically shaped just like Genshin. You had, like, wall-to-wall nerd stuff. And it was in a rectangular position. And there was, like, one sitting table for everyone in the room. And there was a computer in the bottom right corner. And beyond that, I would say that I still want more of it. I'm sure there are more stories to tell. They could create new characters if they wanted to. I don't really know the fate of Genshin at this point, but if you ever get the chance, I highly recommend it. It's not a long watch.
You talked briefly about one plot line where they almost lose the club because of a fire, but like what other kind of plot lines are there, you know, like where slice of life is exactly that. It can seem kind of mundane, but what makes this particular one stand out?
It stands out because it's kind of like a character study of nerd culture as a whole. I feel a lot of time that in Japanese culture, they tend to demonize geeks as a whole because they see them as social pariahs. Mm-hmm. They don't celebrate the way we do it in the States. And I don't see them ever getting to that point. But this felt in earnest. It didn't feel mean-spirited at any point. All the characters were very human. You had characters who developed crushes on each other and it turned to unrequited love. And at one point, while the feelings were brought out into the open, nothing ever came of it. And that's fine because that's life. Sometimes
that's how it happens.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you can tell someone how you feel and they will never feel the same. And you just have to accept that. I don't want to spoil any other storylines because you'd be cheating yourself some great character moments.
Okay. As I mentioned earlier, I've seen my fair share of, you know, slice of life stuff. And for the most part, it's just kind of something you put on in the backwards or something that someone from my anime club in college brought in. It's never been my favorite because I'm a sadist and I like punishing myself.
Well, wouldn't that watching it be punishing yourself?
so much. So my pick for slice of life was The Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya, which is set up as your standard slice of life high school anime. But very quickly goes completely off the rails. So the whole thing is told from the perspective of the main character, Kyun, who's a very normal guy, like the definition of normal high school student. And he walks in day one, freshman year, and sits by this girl. And she's very pretty, but she's kind of weird. She has a different hairstyle every single day of the week. Depending on what day of the week it is, she has different tie-off points. So she'll start Monday with her hair down, Tuesday in a ponytail. Wednesday, she's got 3 tie-off points, 4, blah, blah, blah. And she wears different color ribbons every day. So she's very odd. And he finds out very quickly that her name is Haruhi Suzumiya. And day one, as they're going around introducing themselves in class, she says that the way she introduces herself is, "I'm not interested in normal people, but if you're an alien, time traveler, or Esper, please come find me," and sits back down. And so she immediately sets herself off as, "I don't care about normal people." She's basically unapproachable, and she would be more of a otaku social pariah, except for the fact that she's gorgeous and she excels in everything she does. Mm-hmm. She's always bored. She finds life, reality, humanity boring. So she will try out for every single club that's out there, spend a day doing it, be amazing at it, and then just go, "Meh, it's not holding my attention." And leave and move on to the next thing the next day. So Kyon is immediately fascinated by her. And she's also always very, very serious. She doesn't say anything sarcastically. She doesn't make jokes. Like, if she says something, she means it.
Mm-hmm. And it kind of, like, throws Kyon off a few times because she can come off as standoffish.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. There's all these rumors floating around about her career in middle school and all the weird shit that she did. And, mm-hmm. you know, you look at her and you can't quite believe that, but it also kind of tracks. So anyways, Kyon eventually, somehow, manages to actually strike up a conversation with her. And they become friends. Mm-hmm. And he suggests to her, "Well, you can't find anything that's interesting to you. Why don't you create a club?" And she immediately goes, "Oh my God, yes, that's exactly what I need to do." So she creates the SOS Brigade, the point of which is to find and investigate any supernatural happenings. So basically she starts this, she drags Kyon in and immediately says, "You fill out all the paperwork." And day one, she has commandeered another club room's club, the literacy club, or not literacy, but reading club, yes. Literary club. That's what it is. Lit club, literature. Yeah, yeah. She takes the lit room over because there's only one member and she doesn't give a shit. She's like, "As long as I can sit here and read, I don't care what you guys do in the room." So it's the three of them. Day one, she drags in a girl who's a sophomore, a year older than them, who's very cute, and literally the only reason is Haruhi drags her in, shows she's moe. And in order for things to happen in every anime, you need the moe character. So, here we go.
So, explain what moe is for...
Think of it almost as the very cute, dumb blonde character, almost. Like, she's very... Like I said, she's very cute, she's always beautiful, and she doesn't quite stick up for herself, and everything that she does is endearing, mm-hmm. and things happen to her,
yeah.
rather than her making things happen.
Right.
So in our culture, it would really translate more to, like, the dumb blonde trope, but it's not the same thing. Yeah, yeah, like kind of. Something like that. Valley Girls and none of these are quite right in, you know, but that's the closest American approximation I can think of. Spelled M-O-E, look it up online for a more detailed, you know, prescription of that trope broken down.
Google it.
Don't be surprised if you find most is like.
All right, so yeah,
So, anywho, so, you know, she's done this, and she's bringing all these people in to create this club. All kinds of weird misadventures happen. Pretty quickly, we find out, though, that this is not your typical club slice of life anime. Haruhi can bend reality to her whim. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't know this. So, in this club, the lit person turns out to be an alien. The Moe character, who is named Mikuru, is a time traveler. And later on, you have a mysterious transfer student who comes in, which was another, like, oh, mysterious transfer student, we need to have him. He transfers in, turns out he's an Esper. An Esper is someone who has powers. Mm-hmm. Think, you know, like X-Men or superheroes or stuff like that, again, yeah. For American culture. And so, yeah, immediately this whole thing goes completely off the rails and turns into slice of life with a bizarre supernatural twist. And Haruhi basically is bored enough with reality that she creates pocket dimensions. Which can potentially, yeah, she creates pocket dimensions whenever she gets super bored. And there's a fear that one day the pocket dimension will become the new reality, and reality as we know it is just going to cease to exist.
Are we going to talk about that infamous string of episodes? Are we? Because I really want to.
We can. Would you like to talk about it? Oh. You can. So, okay. So, again, before we get into this, I'm just kind of focusing on the main plot, which really takes place only in 6 episodes. So, all this happens, and it turns out that Kyon is the only thing that Haruhi finds interesting enough. And when she does eventually create this pocket dimension that is going to become the new reality, he convinces her that reality is worth hanging on to, and it continues as a normal slice of life anime after that, after this huge, bizarre existential crisis that Haruhi is bored, so she just created a new dimension with monsters, and she's finally interested, and life is cool, and she's going to create this new world. And it all comes back to that really basic slice of life trope that she basically had a crush on Kyung. And it all came back to a really mundane motivation within these bizarre, extraordinary circumstances.
And what's crazy is that, like, you know, if you tie it back, like if you loop it back to how people are, right, you start to see that. Especially, I don't know, I think it's really big in people who are anxious, where they start to create all these possible outcomes in their mind, mm-hmm. of how bad it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And so this kind of pokes fun at that, and like not to harp on people who have anxiety or anything, but it's a way of breaking down your anxiety and making it comical, because I'm not an anxious person, but I've heard people say, all these things like, what if this happens? What if this happens? And then it's going to be like this. Then it's going to be like that. And it's going to, and they take a small issue and they snowball it into something that's way more potent and way more greater than what it's supposed to be. They make a mountain out of a molehill. And again, I'm not trying to simplify anxiety at all, but one of the things that you do see are some psychological issues that people are able to adapt to. And so, the thing about high school, right, is that everyone's always trying to fit in. Well, so there's this girl who is trying her best not to fit in. And in doing so, she still falls into the same traps that happened in high school. Am I club going to be the best? Or am I going to be the best? Or does this person like me or not? And so I think it's interesting because as a slice of life, not only is it deconstructive, but it kind of like warps its way back into reality, you know, in a sense.
That's a really interesting take on it. I think that comparing it to anxiety with all the different ways that these could do, that's not the right tone. Mm-hmm. I think that that's a very interesting interpretation and you could take it as that, but how it's presented in the series, I wouldn't call that, because I do have crazy high anxiety and I my brain will go off into the, oh, I should have said this, or, you know, if this happens, then A, B, and C, and D are going to happen, which will end up in the destruction of my life as I know it.
Right.
Whereas this is more, she's incredibly bored, and she's fantasizing about all the different things that could happen to make life interesting.
Right.
So it's the same process, but in an extremely different mental state, in an extremely different emotional state. Mm-hmm. It's significantly less high stakes than your anxiety brain would make it.
Right.
But then, funnily enough, it ends up become, because she has this power, because she has this control, it ends up becoming a very high stakes situation.
Mm-hmm.
And that is part of why I like it so much, is because you have these high stakes situations, these absurd supernatural things. And like I said, it all ends up boiling down to the motivations being a very typical slice of life nonsense.
Yeah.
I would liken it more to a Walter Mitty complex, if anyone remembers that story. The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, where you had the main character, Walter Mitty, who was so disenfranchised with his reality that he would create these narratives in his head. And yeah, I don't see the anxiety angle. I see it as more like,
I can see it now that you've pointed it out. It's just not,
it's not thrown out in that fashion.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I can see what you're saying. I don't necessarily agree with that being the intention. That right. is a read that you can take off of this.
Absolutely.
But I don't think it was the intention.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was saying, a Walter Mitty complex, in the sense where it's just like fans can relate to Hardaway, in a sense like where they're bored reality as a whole because they want to be something greater than the world that they're in. And here you have this protagonist who has the ability to crack that veil, and it really makes the entire narrative of Hardaway extremely engaging.
So the other interesting aspect of this series is the fact that the main plot is in 6 episodes, but the whole show was aired completely out of order.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the rest of the season comprised of much more typical slice of life episodes of dealing with the school fair, of dealing with your beach day, of dealing with the club problems in a very mundane sense.
Mm-hmm.
But all of these episodes were interspersed in a totally random episode between
yes.
the main plot. So it adds to this bizarre, chaotic, unreal feel of the series as a whole, because you never quite know what's going on. You never quite know where you are in the timeline.
Yeah, it almost makes it like an absurdity or almost like a comedy.
It is, yes. It definitely adds, you know, adds that sense to it of like I said, the chaotic confusion, which is what the series really went for. That's in at the end of the episode where you have the next time on kind of thing, you would often have Kyun and Haruhi saying different things. Haruhi talking about what's going to happen next time, and then Kyun jumping in and saying, wait, no, it's supposed to be, this is what's happening next time. And you'd have the two of them kind of conflicting, where Kyun, the voice of reason,
mm-hmm.
is telling you what's supposed to happen next in the order, and Haruhi, the agent of chaos, is telling you what actually will happen next, even though it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Well, just goes to show, if you take enough slices of life, sooner or later, you'll find a cosmic wormhole.
Very literally in this case.
Yeah.
That's that. that's the melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya. And if you're interested in watching this series, I do highly recommend it. Go online and look up the various episode orders that you can watch it in and decide which order you want to watch it in, whether you're watching it canonically, or whether you're watching it with the air date order, or whether you're watching it with the DVD order, because all three of those are different, and intentionally so.
Is it also different qualities, too?
No, it's all the same show.
Oh, because I know, I've heard of, like, some series when they release on, like, DVD and Blu-ray, it's, like, two separate, like, qualities of the show, like, animation qualities. Like, I can't put my finger on what it was, which series it was, it's just... That sort of just
are you thinking, we were talking about Utenya last week.
Yeah.
That might be
where that had the different, but that wasn't so much. This is all exactly the same show. It literally comes down to the order that the episodes are ordered in.
I got
that's you. The only difference.
Yeah, pretty okay. much how it's cut. You
yeah.
know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Yeah, it's movie, all right? exactly the same. I don't know. Maybe. Google. That's something. Yeah, that's something to look up. I'll Google that as we move
I'm
on to the.
Sure there is.
Okay, I don't doubt you. I'll look that up while we move on to our next topic.
So the slice of life anime that I picked is titled "Welcome to the NHK."
Good one.
Yeah. So NHK stands for Nihon Hikikomori Kyokai, which is they break it down to Japanese Hikikomori Conspiracy or Association or whatever translation you want to pick. Now, this anime touches on various issues in society, some of which are more prevalent now than they were before, but it deals with disenchantment with life, it deals with loneliness, it deals with depression, it deals with suicide, it deals with a lot of heavy topics. And I know at the beginning we said that slice of life kind of helps you tone down and it becomes a palate cleanser. That's one of the reasons why this anime is so well liked, because it deals with more than just your normal affairs of life. And it does it in such a way that's so real that you can almost place your shoes in these characters' shoes. And so the breakdown of characters goes a little something like this. Let me pull up my notes. So the main character's name is Sato. Where is it? The main character is this dude who drops out of college. He's 22 years old. Now, I dropped out of art college, which is where I met Byron. But
yeah.
I dropped out and I was like 19, 20. So immediately there was already like parallels that I was able to draw with this character. And so he ends up dealing with his life in a way where he just like withdraws from society. And when you start to feel depressed and lonely, that's something that you do a lot of. You start to withdraw away from people. You don't want to deal with people. You just want to, like, try and hash out your own issues, which some people have the mental fortitude to do it. But in reality, as human beings, we're meant to connect with people. We're meant to deal with our issues together. And so he does the normal thing that people tend to do, which is we withdraw. And so you have him doing that, and you have an otaku who used to be his friend in junior high, and he is dealing with his own issues because he is an otaku and being ostracized because of his love for anime and how much he ends up becoming a fan of it. Then the female of the story, I forget her name, I'm terrible with names anyway, I forget her name, but she is a high school dropout, and so she ends up making a deal with Sato saying, if you sign this contract, I'll cure you of your Hikikomori lifestyle. Now, the Hikikomori lifestyle is, again, this person that withdraws from society because they're kind of disenchanted with life, which is a similar trope that we can see in the melancholy of...
There's a name for that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Cool!
At least in the Japanese language.
I like it. That applies to me a
so
lot.
I guess for English, it would be like a hermit or a recluse, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But hermit or recluse kind of tends to have a more positive connotation. While Hikikomori has a completely negative connotation.
Like, okay, no... I wouldn't necessarily say that hermit or recluse has a positive connotation, but I can see
one,
comparatively.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
A neutral one.
Yeah, all right. Comparatively.
Fair enough.
And so she enters this deal with Sato saying, hey, if you sign this contract, I will cure you of your Hikikomori ways.
Hmm.
And so she's like 19, he's 22, he has a bit more life experience, but he's like, what the hell? I'll try it anyway. So he signs a contract, and they start going through this process of just talking issues out, dealing with loneliness, dealing with depression, and it gets to a point where they start to develop feelings for each other. But Sato wants nothing to do with it because he feels like a relationship at this point is just going to bring him more drama, more stuff he doesn't need in his life. So he completely pulls out, and he pulls out to the point of where he finds an online group where they create a suicide pact. And so it starts to get real deep and real heavy with issues at this point, because you start to see the mental degradation, and not in a sense, and not in a horror sense, but in a almost like a real life sense, where it's like, where you start to think to yourself, wow, this dude really has no self-worth, because he ends up saying things like, you know, she's better off without me. I'd have no real reason to exist anymore. I've had 4 years unemployed. I'm a high school dropout. She has no future with me. I have no future for myself. And so you start to see that snowball effect, this mental decline in Sato. And he gets so close to committing suicide, where his friends, both the otaku and this girl, end up stopping him from doing it. And there's all sorts of tears going, there's all sorts of emotions being flung around in the air. And it becomes a real, real heavy moment in the anime. And then it progresses further, where the girl, she ends up going all down on herself. And it gets real heavy with her, because I don't know if people have noticed this or not, and say what you want to say about this, but women, especially in other societies, maybe not so much American society, but even I think it's pretty heavy in American society too, but more is expected of women, because you're supposed to be naturers, you're supposed to be nurturers, you're supposed to be free, you're supposed to be liberal, you're supposed to be sexually restrained but sexually free, and there's so many contradictions pulling women apart in so many different directions, and then you have thank you. And then you have
the Japanese. No, as the woman in the group, yes.
I don't mean to mansplain or anything.
No. You're doing a good job. I'm giving you a mansplain waiver, because you're putting it into words well.
And so in Japan, you have the added societal impacts of being a woman that go on top of all these expectations. And so
it gets so much worse in Japan by comparison, definitely. Mm-hmm.
And so you have this girl who's a high school dropout, and she's trying to help out her friend, and she feels like a failure because of that. And she ends up trying to do a swan dive off a building, and she gets stopped by Sato, who becomes her best friend, and they end up loving each other platonically in a sense. Mm-hmm. And it gets to the point where he has to make her go into a contract that says, you can't kill yourself unless I kill myself. And that just goes to show you that, you know, in times of need, what you need is a good friend, and what you need is humanity. Mm-hmm. And Welcome to the NHK is able to represent humanity at its worst and humanity at its best. And it takes you through this emotional, psychological roller coaster, because you're seeing these three different points of views from these three different individuals who are inherently normal, but extreme cases of the normal. So again, you have a girl who's a high school dropout who feels like a failure. You have a guy who's a college dropout who also feels like a failure. Then you have a guy who's shunned because he has an obsession with anime, which is like an otaku culture, which I guess for us would be nerd or geek culture.
Yeah.
So all throughout the anime, you're seeing these three different lives play out separately and together at the same time, and there's this cute little refresher or foil that happens, because some of the issues that you deal with are pretty heavy, and it's called Pururin-chan. Yes. And so there's this like cutesy almost like a moe character, where she sings boo 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 doo ding, and like, and it's so cute, and it's so like so sweet. Yeah, it's almost like that little like foil palate cleanser after dealing with all these heavy issues. But
oh man,
welcome to the NHK. It's like 26 episodes long. It's very relevant, especially now since loneliness is on the uprise. Check it out. Welcome to the NHK.
Go ahead. I want to make an additional recommendation with that. If you're into YouTube culture at all, I highly recommend checking out Mother's Basement, because he does an amazing analysis on the opening of Welcome to the NHK.
Right. The themes. Yeah. Oh, that's another thing. The music themes.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. So the first half, the song is called Puzzle, and then that's the opening. And then the ending is a remix version of that song. And so I didn't delve too much in the lyrics, but the fact that the title of the song itself is Puzzle, just like, there's so much going on in the human mind that needs to be broken down and that you need to, like, dissect and things like that. And so Welcome to NHK is able to do that in a way that's simple, sincere, and real. And, like, and that's just more motivation for you to watch it. Yes. Watch it. Watch it.
I know I definitely will be. Because a lot of the things that you were just talking about are relate very, very strongly to me and my own mentality. You were talking, bringing it back down, bringing it real for a second here. When you were talking about how when you're so low, you need other people so much. That's, I mentioned earlier, I suffer from anxiety. Hey, I have the fun double. I also suffer from depression. A huge part of the reason why I would never personally do anything to harm myself is because I care more about others than I do about myself. Mm-hmm. The fact that I have very, very little, and this is something I'm, you know, working on and I'm doing much better with, but I have very, very little sense of self-worth. But at the same time, because of my mothering aspect and how much I care about other people, I know that it would hurt too many other people to do something to myself. And that's, you're talking about that specifically in that show is something that is going to hugely, hugely resonate with a lot of people who've had to deal with depression and suicidal thoughts and all that fun stuff is looking at how you deal with those things on your own, but also, and I think more importantly, how you deal with those things with the people you surround yourself with.
Right.
So that's I just wrote that down, like, I gotta watch this, because I mentioned earlier also I'm a sadist, and I'm going to watch that and cry a lot, but it'll be good.
Oh, yeah, you
so cry. I've never seen this series, but I'm also recommending it based on your description, because holy cow.
Yeah. I definitely need to rewatch it myself.
Open the floodgates.
Yeah, right?
Like, I'm not a hard dude or anything like that, but, yo, it does make you cry.
Yeah. Shit. All right, moving on. What do you have for us?
All right. For my slice of life, I just want to throw it out there. I am a huge, avid fan of model kit building. And for me, I know there are aspects of it that aren't really slice of life, but Gundam Build Fighters is like, I was already well into like the model building thing. That just got me even deeper into it. Main character, Sei Iori. He's the son of a Gunpla shop. Gunpla is the name of a Gundam model. It's like a mashup of like plastic model and Gundam, so Gunpla. So his parents own a Gunpla shop, and they're just stacked walls to walls with various boxes of molds. I'm just gushing right now.
Gush away, friend.
Yes.
Okay. So, in this series, the Gundam franchise exists as a show, as it does in ours, but on top of that, they have this engineering system called the Pulaski Particle System, which allows the little model kits to actually like move around and fight each other. So there's that little sci-fi aspect that got thrown into the slice of life mix. But what resonated with me was just his Sei's determination to like improve on his craft of like the quality of like the gunpla that he creates. Like they get like better as like the show goes on. Like, yeah, like some do get destroyed as it goes along, but he learns from like the mistakes he's learned from that and picks up from that to adapt for his next one he builds.
Very nice. Cool.
So what makes this a slice of life as opposed to an adventure or your typical, you know, Gundam versus, like, kaiju kind of series,
well,
you know?
All the other Gundam ones have been set in, like, settings of, like, warfare and combat. Well, yes. This one is just set in everyday life. It's like, oh, you want to have a Gundam battle? It's like, hey, let's go down to the arcade and have a match. It's a lot like video game battling, because when I'm in the middle of like a Gundam versus match, I'm sort of like imagining I'm there like controlling it myself, like it's the actual, like, yeah, here we go.
Oh yeah, that's right. Now I'm more familiar with the sequel series to
Gundam Try,
which a lot of fans of Build Fighter tell me is the inferior model.
From a pure standpoint of view, yes, but from a slice of life standpoint of view, it's more like true to a slice of life sort of series. Like there's less. Well, there's that one character, Reiji, who was like an interdimensional character, so that sort of like made it a little less slice of life than Try did.
Okay, yeah, and Try is set in the same universe.
Yes, it's just like a few years later.
Yes. So, is there anything else you want to expand upon with that topic?
Would have been good if I was a lot more sociable when I was younger.
Absolutely. I remember like watching it and thinking like, I want this to be a real thing. It's like, rather there were Angelic Lair where it's just like, it's kind of this Angelic Lair was kind of the same concept where you take your figure or your doll in the case of Angelic Lair and you fight against each other. Only thing is with Build Fighter Gundam, you have like all the fantastical elements of the Gundam franchise. You have the blasters, you have the ridiculous weaponry, and it's really cool if you're in that universe. You're a fan of the various storylines, so it's like you can pit Burning Gundam against Wing Zero, and everything is free reign. Or you have RX-89 go up against God Gundam, or Devil Gundam, see who would come out on top of that. I have an honorable mention. Let me pull my notes for that. Comic Party. Now, Comic Party is one of those very special ones for me because I want to say that was the third series that I gotten into after I started going to conventions. Right after I came back from Big Apple Anime Fest, I had a DVD sampler for, and one of the episodes was Comic Party, and it's about a fledgling doujinshi artist named Kazuki Sendo. He reunites with one of his old childhood buddies named Taishi Kuenbutsu. You don't need to remember it because he doesn't say his last name very often. One of the cool points I should bring up for any of you Critical Role fans, Taishi in the original series of the dub is voiced by Liam O'Brien. And this is back when he used to do work strictly for Central Park Media. So they reunite and Taishi is like the ultimate otaku. Like he sees Kazuki and he's like, "You remember how to draw, right? Why did you get into doujinshi?" He's like, Kazuki's like, "I don't know. I just like to doodle." He's like, "But we can take over the world with doujinshi!"
Yes.
And because Taishi sees doujinshi as like the ultimate gateway to pop culture success.
So what's doujinshi?
Doujinshi, fan comics. That's the term they use in the Central Park Media dub.
So like what, self-published?
Yes, yeah, self-published.
Okay. See, I know doujinshi as porn. Well, that's what I was like. Oh, I was sitting there going like, really?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Doujinshi, like, is what I see. I mean, that's the term I've ever known for doujinshi is basically taking an existing material, segue next week is going to be about sports anime. There's a lot of Yuri on Ice doujinshi out there.
Yes, there is.
It takes, there's a doujinshi about everything out there. But it's a fan published using established characters and fandoms, and then instead of fan fiction, which is written, it's
drawn.
Visual, it's drawn.
Yes.
And you have entire, basically, like, mini comics that are just about essentially your sexy fan fiction.
We shall conquer the copyright with use of tentacles.
Yes!
Well, I think, and the funny thing about doujinshi in real, it's what the imports that we get here are usually of porn variety. But in Japan, doujinshi runs the gamut of just about anything. Most of them are like original takes on established characters. Some of them are more adapted works to try to make it their own. And in this case, that was what Taichi had in mind for Kazuki's talent. He wanted the two of them make their own company called the Two Brothers. And Taichi's kind of just like pushing him every step of the way to become a great doujinshi artist. But it's all about accepting the things that you love. It's not necessarily a celebration of Kazuki culture per se, but yeah, it's just about like what you like and everyone else be damned.
Hear, hear.
Like I said, I don't have a huge arsenal of slice of life stuff, so I'm having trouble thinking of another, like, quick mention. I have plenty of stuff in my brain that people have told, like, I know that other people enjoy, but I haven't watched or read it myself, so I can't really recommend it or not.
Runner-ups for slice of life, not really, because after Welcome to NHK, it's hard to top it, and so...
We're not trying to top it.
I'm saying for me to watch another slice of life, it's hard to top it.
It's not worth your time.
And so it's hard to commit to it. I did watch The Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya. That's another one that I enjoyed. However, the thing about slice of life is that they kind of rope it in with other genres. Like, I'm pretty sure The Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya is termed as a comedy. And then there are some animes that are termed as a seinen, even though it has slice of life tropes in it.
Mm-hmm.
So one of those would be, oddly enough, Coyote Ragtime Show is still dubbed as a seinen, slice of life, and sci-fi. And I don't get it, but the reason why is because there's a lot of family tropes in it. And what is family in reality? It's real short. It's 12 episodes, but you see this old guy who kind of adopted his best friend's daughter, and then you see them going through space trying to get the daughter's inheritance, and all the people that are vying for the daughter's inheritance, and like all these like different people trying to steal it and whatnot. And at the end of it, does it kind of fit? Maybe, because the idea of family is very pushed forward in the anime. However, it's still super sci-fi, so I don't know if I'd lowball that as a slice of life.
Yeah.
What I'd throw out there for an honorable mention would have to be Golden Boy. I haven't seen this. It's been a good decade since I've seen it, so I couldn't do an honest review on it. It's been just so long, but from what I remember seeing, it was a great series.
Oh man, my ex loved that series.
Golden Boy. Six episodes, a genius guy is trying to beat the world at its own game. Dunzo.
On a bike.
Yo, that last episode where he gets his wife, that is ridiculous. Ridiculous.
I do actually have one more honorable mention before we wrap things up. Quick watch. It's called Tonari no Seki-kun. It's a really quick setup. You have these two high school classmates sitting next to each other. They sit next to each other, and Seki-kun, who is the titular character, he has this penchant for doing ridiculous things at his desk. And his neighbor is kind of just like, what? Like, how are you doing that? Like, he'll build these absurd model kits at his desk. He even like has done panels for his own animation while in class, and she's just like the straight man the entire time. And they're like 5-minute episodes. If you're looking for more anime and just a good slice of life, I highly recommend it.
I'm actually going through just like a quick list of like top 20 slice of life, you know, anime, and I'm going, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. So quick just read off. Toradora is very, very good. Look into that. Where'd it go? I know Strawberry Panic is very popular. Lucky Star is very popular. I don't know. That's what I'm
Strawberry Panic. All right,
maybe not. Maybe not. Because there's another thing I saw free on this list, and I would categorize that as a as a sports anime, but it's also slice of life. Fruits Basket.
Yes.
Nobody talked about Fruits Basket, and that's
the whole animal thing kind of breaks the whole... Again, yeah.
The official definition... Well, Fruits Basket is another really, really good one. That's technically a slice of life. The official definition for slice of life is themes usually range from teen coming of age, interpersonal relationships, family, romance, to fantasy and science fiction. A common trait in slice of life anime and manga is their emphasis on seasonality or procedures. And so that's why it's such a huge genre to try and incorporate, even within just this one conversation. Yeah. We've talked about slice of life applying to... supernatural things. We've talked about it applying to a space setting. We've talked about it applying to a mech setting. We've talked about it applying to a simple school setting. And when you think slice of life, you typically think, I mean, I typically think just of the high school setting, of that kind of thing, of, like I said, of Lucky Star, of Haruhi Suzumiya minus the supernatural stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But really, because it focuses on, with the emphasis being on seasonality and procedures, it's about, within the context of the show, the mundane. And the thing is that within the context can be anything, which is what makes it such an overarching and hard to pin down genre. Because, yeah, again, like, in this conversation alone, we didn't cover a ton of stuff. And, like I said, Toradora is a very good one that I highly recommend people look into, and I can't believe I didn't think of that earlier. Same, Fruits Basket, hugely popular one. Cannot believe that didn't occur to me.
Chobits.
Would you say Chobits is a...
I say it's more
is
romance.
Is a slice of life?
I say that's more romance, though. Like, more romance intense.
Because it's certainly, I don't think I would count Chobits because it's not about the day-to-day. It's about something truly extraordinary happening to someone and him kind of trying to deal with the fallout of it.
And make it normal again.
And make it normal again, yeah. but yeah, no, like I said, it's a very, really digging into it, it's a difficult to define or difficult to encapsulate. Easy to define, difficult to encapsulate genre. So, yeah, no, if you guys, we've got plenty of online presence now across, we've got a Facebook page, we've got a website, we've got a
Instagram.
Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff, and we're on top of our branding. It's all Weeb Trash Can.
Yes.
So if you think that we missed any other, like, really obvious slice of life, or you want to introduce us to your favorite slice of life, please comment on any of those platforms, and let us know what we missed. Let us know what you think of the definition that I just read off Google.
All right, and I want to bring up one more thing. As of this recording, we're like 2 weeks away from Anime Boston. Most of us won't be there, but I'm definitely certain that both I and 606 will be there. Mark, you going?
I'm doing my best to clear up my schedule.
All right, cool. So a couple of us are going to be hanging out. If they do the Crunchyroll Lounge again this year, we'll probably be hanging out around there. You see us, say hi to us. It's great that we have the stronger online presence. We're glad that more people are listening. Check us out on the website at Podomatic. Check us out on iTunes, or check us out on Google Play. Got all those things there for you. Until next time, this is Byron D0 saying, Ja, Matana.
Maggleby, peace out.
Megatron here. I'm sorry to part ways, but I'll be back next week.
And this is Mechanical here. I just got a Twitter account at Zakunonymous. Hey!
Yeah. Welcome to the 21st century, my friend!
Hey, upgrading bit by bit. I'll be going about looking for my old recycled self and taking some parts that I thought were not necessary. Apparently I was wrong.